welcome to the KMXT Weekly Wrap, where we go over this week's news from Alaska's Emerald Isle. I'm your host, Davis Hovey. On this week's recap, Alaska has one of the highest rates of fatal drug overdoses in the country, but the Ketchikan Indian community is looking to change that by opening the state's first tribally-led addiction healing center.
We recognize that it takes the entire village to make somebody well, and we're not going to be, you can't make a body well by just making the hand and the arm and the foot well. You have to make everything well.
More about that story later, but first...
Support for KMXT comes from the Kodiak Area Native Association's Substance Use Treatment Team. Talk with your kids about drugs and tobacco. No matter how young children are, talking with them is one of the best things you can do to keep them drug and tobacco free. Learn more at KodiakHealthcare.org or 907-486-7380.
Roughly 60 households and businesses in Chiniak were without power for a couple of days after high winds around Kodiak Island led to a local power outage. According to an email from Kodiak Electric Association, the power outage was first reported around 8 p.m. on Saturday, December 13th. A large tree was blown over into a power line and broke a pole outside of the co-op's easement in Chiniak. The National Weather Service reported wind gusts up to 60 miles per hour at the Kodiak Airport at various times on both December 13th and December 14th. North to northwest winds were expected to gust as high as 45 miles per hour for most of the week. Kodiak Electric Association says it restored power to roughly half of those affected by Sunday morning, and then the remaining Chiniak customers saw their power restored by 6 p.m. Monday night. Dan Menth, the CEO and president of the local utility provider, said via email that KEA crews worked long hours in tough conditions to restore power in a difficult-to-access location. According to KEA's website, nearly 80 customers are hooked up to the co-op's electric grid in Chiniak. That's out of a total of 6,332 customers across the Kodiak archipelago. In other news, earlier this summer, more than a dozen Kodiak brown bears were causing problems at the Kodiak Island Borough's landfill. Most of those bears have now been cleared out of the landfill as winter has set in and many are starting to hibernate. KMXT recently spoke with some of the wildlife biologists involved in this process and has this report. For at least 5 months, the Alaska State Troopers, Kodiak Island Borough staff, and Alaska Department of Fish and Game biologists have been using trial and error to try to keep brown bears out of the landfill.
That's also what we've been sharing with the landfill folks is, you know, this isn't going to be a one and done thing. It's going to be an ongoing effort.
That's Nate Savoda, the area wildlife biologist with Fish and Game in Kodiak. He says in the fall of this year, they counted more than a dozen bears going in and out of the landfill at any given time. Now, he says, the department has only seen one bear in the landfill as of earlier this month. That's in part due to the department's efforts to deter bears from entering the landfill through non-lethal hazing with rubber bullets, firecracker shells, or by trapping them. Savoda says last month, the department captured two subadult bears inside of a mobile culvert trap made out of aluminum that they placed in the landfill.
It's probably, I don't know, maybe 10, 12 feet in length, probably 4 or 5 feet tall, in a big barrel, essentially a culvert. And we bait it inside the trap, and bears go in, grab the bait, and the door closes behind them.
The bears were then transported to the Menashka Bay Reservoir area last month. Typically, Fish and Game does not relocate bears because Savoda says previous efforts to do so around the state have failed. But in this case, he says the two relocated bears do not appear to have returned to the landfill yet.
You know, if we have bears frequenting a certain location where they shouldn't be, we'll go out and set the trap and see if we can't capture them. It's not super successful most times, but we had some luck at the landfill.
Despite the progress they've made, the borough landfill is not out of the woods yet. The Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation in September found that the borough was violating state laws by allowing bears to enter the site. According to the inspection report, the state told the borough that it needs to remove all bears from the landfill and ensure it is bear-resistant or face fines. So far, DEC staff told KMXT the department has not imposed any fines against the borough. Savoda says he and his staff have been working with the Department of Environmental Conservation.
That's one of our Fish and Game goals, but that's also a directive from DEC that it has to be bear resistant and no bears in the landfill. So that's the ultimate goal.
He says he's cautiously optimistic that goal can be accomplished at the Kodiak Island Borough landfill, especially since many bears have begun denning outside of the facility for winter. But Svoboda says come spring that could all change and the team could be dealing with the same bear issues again. Staff at the borough previously told KMXT that they plan to increase the voltage of the electric fence around the landfill and make structural upgrades in certain areas by last month. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey. A longtime hotel in Kodiak is for sale. After being owned by the same owner for decades, the Shelikoff Lodge is looking for new ownership, KMXT reports. According to the property listing, the Shelikoff Lodge at 211 Thorsheim Street was built in 1966. City of Kodiak records show that the permitting work and construction was completed by the Econotel of Alaska Incorporated in 1965, which owned the land at the time. The Kodiak landmark, which featured the Island Room, was established less than 2 years after the devastating 1964 earthquake and tsunami. When the Shelikoff Lodge first opened its doors, Ardinger's was a house of music. Sid and Martin Urey had just opened a new bar, and it was the heyday of the king crab fishery in Kodiak. Since at least 1974, the Rella May Corporation out of Redmond, Washington, has owned the Shelikoff Lodge, restaurant, and accompanying bar, according to city records. Juris Mindenbergs is the principal owner of Rella May Corporation and has owned not only the Shelikoff Lodge, but also the Breeze Inn in Seward for decades. He sold the Seward Hotel to a group of local owners in March of last year. Mindenbergs could not be reached for comment, but the listing agent for the Shelikoff Lodge said Mindenbergs is selling the Kodiak Hotel because he's retired, and at 84 years old, he's ready for the next chapter of life. According to Kodiak Island Borough property data, the lodge's assessed value is $1.9 million. The current listing price for the Kodiak property, which includes the 16,000-square-foot lodge with 38 rooms and two parking lots, is twice that amount. The listing agent told KMXT they hope the Shelikoff Lodge is bought by someone who wants to preserve the building's legacy. So far, they've had roughly a dozen interested buyers after being on the market for about 2 weeks. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey. A 37-year-old Kodiak man who has been held at an Immigration and Customs Enforcement facility in Washington State for months had a toe amputated after advocates say he was denied adequate medical care while in ICE custody. As KMXT reports, his deportation to the Philippines has been temporarily halted. Greggy V. Sorio has been held at the Northwest ICE Processing Center in Tacoma since at least March. Sorio is from the Philippines and came to the U.S. on a green card in 2007, according to his attorney. He was living in Kodiak prior to being detained by ICE, and Luis Carhart, his attorney, told the Seattle Times that Sorio has a partner and two children who still live on the island. Sorio said in a recorded video message posted on Facebook that he suffered multiple instances of medical neglect while he has been detained at the ICE facility for months. The Tacoma Detention Center has been reported to the State Department of Health for its poor conditions for several years, according to KOMO News in Washington. According to the Seattle Times, Sorio had one of his toes amputated while he was in ICE custody. After being hospitalized for weeks, he developed a chronic inflammatory bowel disease, which requires ongoing medical care. Advocates with the Tongol Migranti movement told KMXT via email that Sorio's medical condition is life-threatening, and they will continue to advocate for him to receive comprehensive medical care at a hospital and be released from ICE custody. The movement says they successfully advocated for Sorio to be removed from a Philippine Airlines flight earlier this month after they reported to the airline that he was unfit to travel on a more than 14-hour flight to the Philippines. According to reporting from Fox 13 Seattle, an ICE spokesperson said that ICE is aware of Sorio's medical concerns and that they were working to meet his medical requirements before his scheduled flight on December 7th. As of December 8th, a federal judge granted Sorio a temporary restraining order preventing him from being deported or removed from Washington State until December 22nd. According to Alaska court records, Sorio was convicted of recklessly causing an injury to another person in 2024. He was also convicted of reckless injury in 2010, fraudulent use of an access device in 2010, reckless endangerment in 2016, fourth degree assault in 2017, and burglary in 2019. Sorio had already finished serving prison time for all of these crimes in Alaska when he was transferred to Tacoma, according to reporting from the Seattle Times. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey. And our final story this week comes from our colleagues at KRBD in Ketchikan. Alaska has one of the highest rates of fatal drug overdoses in the country, but addiction treatment services in Southeast Alaska are limited. As KRBD's Hunter Morrison reports, the Ketchikan Indian community is looking to change that by opening the state's first tribally led addiction healing center.
About 15 miles north of town, Second Waterfall gushes into a rocky shoreline. The natural wonder can be seen and heard from inside the clubhouse of the former Salmon Falls Resort, a longtime tourist destination for fishing, dining, and lodging. A long and blue staircase out the door leads directly to the large fall.
Quite the waterfall.
The 11-acre facility has gone through many hands over the years and was foreclosed on in November. The Ketchikan Indian community purchased the property in cash 2 days after finding out it was up for grabs.
It met all of the qualifications we needed to be able to really move forward on a wellness center.
That's KIC President Gloria Burns. She says the new facility will blend Western and traditional healing practices that will focus on an individual's needs.
We're really excited about the opportunity it's going to give our people to reconnect to the ocean and to the land and to vision with our tribal citizens about what healing looks like to us.
Burns says that approach is modeled after the tribally run Didgwalik Healing Center in Washington State. She says opening a facility to help people struggling with substance misuse has been a part of KIC's strategic plan for nearly a decade.
For some people, they are going to say that my disassociation from not speaking my language is so profound that I can't get by it, and that is my path to healing. And some will say to us, I dream of fish every day in the morning, Gloria. I need to be on the water. I need to be providing for my family.
The recently purchased property is equipped with a restaurant, boat dock, bunkhouses, and guest rooms that can sleep more than 50 people. And there's room to develop more amenities, like traditional food gardens.
Our family members and our loved ones who are in this state of addiction, it's not who they are. It's who they, this system, this drug, has taken who they are from us. And so how do we restore within them the ability to identify in a positive way about themselves and to connect with the land and connect with their family?
Burns has seen dozens of people on the island struggle with addiction over the years. A 2020 study found that addiction treatment is one of the most pressing health needs in the area. But the island has just two addiction treatment facilities, and Southeast's only detox center in Juneau closed about a year ago. Unlike some tribally run healing centers, which are only open to tribal members or native people, KIC's new facility will be open to everyone.
We recognize that it takes the entire village to make somebody well, and we're not going to be, you can't make a body well by just making the hand and the arm and the foot well. You have to make everything well.
The tribe is still fleshing out a plan for what the healing center will look like and how it will operate. Burns says they also need to fix up the facility's plumbing and remodel some buildings to tailor it to their needs. Burns hopes the healing center will be open to the public next fall. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Hunter Morrison.
KMXT is supported in part by the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center, providing support for victims of domestic and or sexual violence. 907-486-6171.
If you enjoy this podcast, make sure to subscribe to us on Spotify. Our staff put together KMXT stories every week to help you keep up to date on the archipelago's latest news. And that'll do it for this week's edition of the KMXT Weekly Wrap. Again, I'm your host, Davis Hovey. We'll be taking some time off from the wrap during the holidays, so we'll have a new episode for you after the start of the new year. See you in 2026.